Who is your neighbour? We're going to be talking about neighbours today, and I wonder how well you know your neighbours. Now, I wonder if you recognise any of the faces on the screen. They're quite far away. Some of you at the back are too young to recognise any of those, so don't worry if you can't see. That's actually the cast of Neighbours from about 1986. So there's Jason Donovan, top at the back, and Kylie Minogue is somewhere down the front here. Anyway, I just put that up for my amusement. So, how well do you know your neighbours, and how well do they know you? Do you think, for example, they know that you're a Christian? I don't think our neighbours are in any doubt on this point, because they have witnessed many Sunday mornings when we have been prizing our children's fingers off the doorframe, whilst they've been shouting into the courtyard, "I don't want to go to church!" There was one summer when we were having a courtyard barbecue with our neighbours. One of our neighbours couldn't get their barbecue lit, so Andy put his hand over the coals to see how hot it was getting. And shortly after that, it burst into flame. And our neighbour admitted to Andy some time later that he thought he must have been praying for it. So, the parable we're looking at this morning was told in answer to the question, who is my neighbour? And I'm going to be looking at a couple of important questions provoked by our reading from Luke. One is, where is God? And the other, who is my neighbour? Now, if you have children, if you work with children, or in fact, if you bump into children on the street, you will know that they ask a lot of questions. I wonder if you've ever been floored by a child's question like, what does God look like? Will I recognise you in heaven? What will happen if North Korea actually drops a bomb on America? That was my daughter's question. The guy in our story today was asking a tricky question of Jesus. And as Jesus often did, he answered by telling him a story. Now, if we're familiar with the story of the Good Samaritan, we've probably reduced its message to love God and do good to people, and you'll be okay. And then we teach it to our kids in Sunday school, and we hope that all will be well with the world. But perhaps when we really think about this story, what we actually see is a good man gets robbed and left on the road for dead, and the church walks by. Now, I know that there's a lot of amazing folk in our church here who do so much for so many people to look after them. But I also know that sometimes we can feel missed or passed over, or sometimes we just feel that nobody sees our pain. I wonder if that's ever been your experience. Secretly, we know it isn't well with the world. And what will happen if North Korea drops that bomb? And so our question might turn out to be, where is God? Where is God now my child is ill? Where is God now I've lost my job? Where is God now I've got this diagnosis? Where is God now that child is being abused or these children are starving? And by the way, if you find him, will he really be big enough to deal with my crisis? But there's actually much more to this story than we see at first glance. You see, Jesus told the parable in answer to the question, who is my neighbour? And it turns out that this is the really important question, and it helps to answer the cry of our heart, where is God? I'm going to give you another little synopsis of the story. A man, quite probably a Jewish man, is walking down the road, gets attacked by robbers who leave him for dead. Two religious men separately see him and choose to walk by on the other side. Finally, a Samaritan, who was hated by the Jews, sees him and stops. He gently tends him, puts him on a donkey, takes him to an inn, and pays for his care. And at the end of the parable, Jesus ends with a question. Which of these three men was a neighbour to this man? Now, it would have been radical enough for Jesus to talk about a wounded Samaritan being helped by a Jew. But Jesus flips it around. He makes the Samaritan the saviour to the Jew. Not only did this make a despised foreigner the hero of our story, but it also forced the expert in the law and those who were listening alongside him to identify with the vulnerable character left for dead on the road. Who is my neighbour? My neighbour is the one who helps me when I'm lying on the road. So how does this answer our question, where is God? God always identifies himself with the lost, the broken, the widow and orphan, the stranger and alien. Jesus literally bears our sorrows and the sorrows of everyone that he died for. He enters into our pain, which is why we find him among the broken. Can we identify with those who are vulnerable? A couple of weeks ago, Simon spoke about the generosity he saw among the Christians in Lebanon. And in fact, Hilary was talking about that this morning as well. They're reaching out to the once hated Syrian refugees. And this is not just a case of a couple of soup kitchens. These Lebanese Christians are sharing their lives, their resources, in a radical hospitality that weeps with those who weep and isn't counting the cost 5 years on. Where is God? He is in the love these Lebanese Christians are showing to the Syrian refugees. But shockingly, Jesus is also among the refugees. I'd like to go back to the children for a moment. Children in our own country. It's been calculated that every 16 minutes a child is taken into care. Every 16 minutes. That's 90 children a day. Almost two-thirds of these are removed for reasons of neglect or abuse. Most children in the care system live in foster placements. They're a temporary situation, usually, and often with numbers of other children. There's a national shortage of available adopters and foster carers, and the negative angle of the press does nothing to encourage people to come forward. Behind those statistics are individual children who have been severely traumatised, just like the refugee children in Lebanon. They probably witnessed violence. They have undoubtedly been terrified. They too have lost everything they ever knew, including their parents, their friends, and most of their belongings. Where is Jesus? He is among them. Now, I don't know about you, but as I look at the national and world news as it gets reported to us, I feel increasingly a sense of darkness creeping over the earth, a bit as like Ali was praying earlier. A feeling I suspect Christians have had since the beginning of time. I wonder if you share my longing that Jesus would return riding on a heavenly charger and do battle with all the selfishness and injustice in the world. And whilst I believe that day will come, while we wait, if we're looking for Jesus, we're much more likely to discover that he comes quietly and dwells with the poor, the oppressed, the widow and orphan, the refugee and the alien. This morning I want to share with you a personal story. As many of you know, we adopted a little boy just over a year ago. I'm not going to share his story because it's not mine to tell, but I do want to tell you why we did this, despite knowing that it might well present us with extreme challenges. We read in the Bible that God loves widows and orphans and asks us to take care of them. It's a simple mandate. And we thought to ourselves, if we can adopt, faced with so much need, why wouldn't we? And if we don't, then who will? At the same time, we realised that as Christians, we are all adopted by God. We're not a natural family. Just have a look around. We're a creation of God, bound by adoption into the family of God, a radical community of believers, and we're all here because of Jesus. In the Bible, God tells us that we've all been adopted as his sons and daughters, that we stand to inherit along with his own precious son, Jesus, if we share in his sufferings. So we began the adoption journey, and I know many of you have been on that journey well ahead of us. Many of you have your own stories as family members or as adoptees. But my story is that the journey from theory into practice has been a challenging one. It still is a challenging one. I suppose I thought just making the decision and being willing would be enough. But it's been harder than I thought. I have to make that decision daily. And the thing that's helped me in this has been to picture Jesus coming as my little boy. Now, I know my little boy is not Jesus, just for the record. Especially when he's standing at the top of the stairs yelling at me, "I'm going to kill you," or "I'm going to kill myself," or I'm leaving your family." But I try to see the broken little child with a huge box of anger, pain, and sorrow, who's trying to make me see how much it hurts. And so I try to see Jesus standing there on the stairs, lost and alone. And that helps me to see past at least some of the challenges some of the time. In the book of Matthew, in the Bible, we see how God identifies himself with those in need. "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" And the king will reply, "Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." So why am I telling you this? Going back to our first question, where is God? He is among the hurting. And if you're in crisis at the moment, maybe you're finding it hard to see God. Maybe you're praying and you can't hear God. But he is right there with you, and he's weeping with you while you weep. What about our second question, the expert in the law's question, who is my neighbour? Jesus suggests there are no boundaries. It's everyone and anyone, wherever they're from, and especially if they're in need. There is no limit to our responsibility when it comes to hospitality. Jesus challenged his followers to broaden their perspective on family. In the book of Romans in the Bible, we're encouraged to be devoted to one another, honouring each other above ourselves, to be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer, and to share with the Lord's people who are in need and practice hospitality. I wonder who you include in your family. Who's at your table? Perhaps you might be in a position to consider fostering or adoption. Or if not, you might consider supporting a family that does. And I know there are many families here. You might not know, but there are. Or you might think about the lonely or the elderly or refugees. We don't talk about widows much, but there are both men and women who've lost their life partners. It's a sadness of unimaginable depth at whatever age it happens. Or indeed, there are those whose spouses have simply left them. These quiet heroes soldier on, trying to parent children alone often, or in tandem with another whose values challenge them to the core. Many of these good people are also trying to work full-time to support the needs of their family. These folk need our love and our encouragement. Who could you say yes to? Who could you welcome to your table? Not for a dinner party, but as a home from home. I have an elderly relation. We used to call her Jeannie with a bun on top. That's because she wore her hair in a bun, not because she had donuts on her head or anything. She always seemed slightly magical to me, and I realise now that's because she's a Christian. Jeannie's the daughter of a missionary. She never married. She didn't have any children. But now she's been formally adopted as a grandma by a family in her church. And she actually lives with this family in a granny flat. She loves them. She prays for them. And they love her. Who could you say yes to? Now, I know that some of you have got the hang of this radical hospitality well ahead of me. I know that some of you are hosting our wonderful interns, and you're experiencing life with young adult teenagers. Thank you. I know many of you provide meals to those in our community who are in need for one reason or another. I know others are supporting families who are struggling with childcare, respite, washing, all kinds of needs. I want to commend Claire and Ben to you. They're probably not here. They're probably out with the youth. In their first months of marriage, they're hosting crowds of teenagers several nights a week. We need to be praying for them. This is not simply about holding dinner parties for new people. This is the kind of hospitality that invites someone to join your family or your home as an insider. Someone who's welcome not just to eat with you, but to cook with you and to wash up afterwards and then to watch the telly and then have a chat. I am beginning to see that radical hospitality does not first count the cost, but rather sees Jesus in the stranger. Whether that stranger is a child needing a family, a refugee, a single parent, or an older person on their own. And then says yes to the stranger, join me at my table for as long as you need this to be your home. I wonder who you could say yes to. And there is a cost, you know, it's really worth being aware of the cost. But don't let that stop you. For us, there's been a cost to our other children. But don't let that stop you. Our response to the stranger is a defining mark of our faith, because it is our response to Jesus himself. Our response to the stranger is a defining mark of our faith, because it is our response to Jesus himself. This story of the Good Samaritan is Christ's definition of loving our neighbour as ourselves. It's the benchmark of Christ-like hospitality, and it should inspire us to respond. Jesus is both our Good Samaritan, rescuing us at great cost to himself, and Jesus is our neighbour, the stranger in need at the door, lying in the road. Now, if you've been inspired to consider who you could say yes to, if you think you might be prepared to consider fostering or adoption or caring for an unaccompanied refugee child, please do come and speak to me or send me an email through the office. And if you have your own story of fostering or adoption and you'd be willing to share it with someone who's considering it, let me know. Send me an email through the office. I'd like to recommend to you two books. If you're thinking about fostering or adoption and you really don't know, why don't you read Krish Kandaya's book, Home for Good? It's full of stories of Christians who've done this kind of thing, and it counters some of the stories we read in the press. Of course it's hard, but have a read, have a think, have a pray. Perhaps that's not for you at all. And if it's not, but you have been challenged by this idea, why don't you read Krish Kandaya's new book, God is Stranger? I'm not even sure if it's out, but I think you can pre-order it. And I'd like to recommend the Home for Good website, homeforgood.org. If you go there, you can read loads of stories of people who've both adopted, fostered, and are looking after refugee children. And again, it just helps to immerse yourself in some of the things that work out well and not just the tragedies. And finally, I would like to give everyone a coaster as they go out. Take this home with you. Put it on the table with your Sunday lunch. Put your glass of wine on it or water. And pray and ask God who you could welcome, who could you say yes to.